Operation Sports is dedicated to sports gaming. Whether you're a hardcore fan diving deep into the intricate details of your favorite games, or a casual player just looking for a few tips to get better, or anyone in between, Operation Sports is your go-to site. Operation Sports world-famous forums are the best source for information for all your favorite sports teams of today, yesterday, and tomorrow. The forums are a goldmine of great content, from amazing roster files to make your franchises completely legit, to tons of great slider settings to personalize the experience just for you. And these are available for virtually every major sports game there is today, plus many from the past. And that's not all. You can create your own personal blog to interact with Operation Sports' dedicated community members, customizing it to your heart's content. Got an opinion about something? Publish it right on Operation Sports and interact with everyone. Operation Sports also produces a ton of great written content every day from its stable of writers and contributors, and it distributes terrific podcasts like College Football's Dual Threat and, hey, yours truly, the Press Row Podcast. So go to Operation Sports every day to be sure that you're in the know and you're having fun. Operation Sports, dedicated to sports gaming.
Go ahead.
Hello, this is the Press Row Podcast with my daddy.
Welcome to the Press Row Podcast, brought to you by Operation Sports. I'm your host, Richard Grisham. All right, well, we are back. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the 61st episode of the Press Row Podcast. I'm your host, Rich Grisham. This is the Press Row Podcast for Friday, December 6, 2013, the second to last regular, I put that in air quotes, show of the year. Let's just get right into it. Moving from left to right on your radio, up first we have a man who is positively giddy as he heads up the Russell Wilson for MVP campaign. From Pasta Padre, Mr. Brian Weedy. Brian, welcome to the show.
Yeah, you know, I recognize Peyton Manning will probably win that, but nobody in the NFL has carried the team like Russell Wilson has. And, you know, he's exceeded everyone's expectations. He's exciting to watch. He's a leader. And now he's putting up numbers, too, which was never really what you looked at when you judged Wilson was his number. So now it's an exciting time here. And I'm ready for the playoffs.
Up next, we have a man who thoroughly enjoys each and every trip to the DMV. From Kotaku, the author of Stick Jockey, Mr. Owen Good. Owen, welcome to the show.
It's a stupid multi-stage process for getting your car legal here in North Carolina. One of the stages is getting your vehicle inspected, which I forgot to do.
Oops.
So, yeah, so we basically have state sanctioned go to a repair shop and give them a reason to tell you something's broken and you have to pay them to fix it.
Sounds like a little bit of a racket, if you ask me.
It can be.
Up next, we have a man who just joined the Jacoby Ellsbury fan club. From Polygon, Mr. Sumit Sarkar. Sumit, welcome to the show.
I mean, I suppose technically I have to be a member of the... Oh, good man. I do not... Oh, yeah, I don't... I mean, we were discussing this earlier. I have a lot to say, but I suffice to say that I don't like this deal at all for the Yankees. I don't see Ellsbury... Just the first of all, I don't see him as a $21.8 million a year player. But, you know.
Well, hey, at least your team actually signs players. Unlike my team, the Mets, who just continue to not sign anybody. Actually, they just let players go. That seems to be their MO. So, all right. But, hey, as I mentioned, this is our second to last show of the year. Obviously, our final show of the year will be our eagerly anticipated sports game of the year, which is going to be a whole lot of fun. And there will not only be the sports game of the year, but we'll have some other categories as well. So what I thought that we were going to do in this episode is really talk about the four biggest sports game stories of the year. I mean, we have been doing this show now for almost 2 years, but this is the first full year from front to back that we've all been together, and we've gone through a whole lot of stuff this year. And so we just kind of wanted to take a little bit of a look back at the year in review. So really, you know, we're just going to count it down from 4 to 1, and we're going to start off with what you would, it's kind of almost surprising when you think about it, but the number 4 story in 2013 from the sports game perspective is the launch of the next generation consoles and the sports games that
number
came
with four
them. Number all four
the, all the way down on the list. Oh man, it's been a
busy year.
That's kind of crazy.
It has. Yeah. Well, it is kind of a crazy year. I tell you what, though. I mean, we're going to talk about each of the four games a little bit, but you know, there were obviously four major sports games that launched. You had Madden, you had FIFA, you had NBA 2K14, and NBA Live. And if you take NBA Live out of the mix, I think it's pretty easy to say that if you are a sports game fan and you bought a new console at launch, you have to be pretty darn happy. And what's interesting to me, and I want to start off with Madden, actually. What's interesting to me is Madden, in the lead-up to the launch of the next generation consoles, was to me the game I was least interested in. When I got a little bit of a sneak preview of it at an event before the launch, I was not impressed by the visuals. It seemed to me to be very much a lot better than what we experienced at the last console launch, just not that big of a deal. Meanwhile, in the interim, especially over the last couple of weeks, in the last week in particular, as we have started our Press Row Madden League on the PS4, I really am enjoying the game a lot. Yes, there are still plenty of some of the sort of legacy issues, but much less of them on the field. And when I say on the field, like, I really enjoy the fundamental X's and O's of just playing this game. And I'm going to want to go around the horn. Brian, you're in the league that we're playing. Mm-hmm. Am I off base or do you agree? Well, you know, are you as happy with Madden and surprisingly as happy with Madden as I am?
God.
No, I'm not. if it wasn't for the league that we're doing, I probably wouldn't be playing it nearly as much as the other two sports games or the other two, you know, main sports games. It is an improvement over what we had on the previous generation of consoles. There's a lot of stuff that was worked on and enhanced that is beneficial, absolutely, and it makes the game more fun. But then there's other stuff, like you can't return a kick, you know, past the first guy down, you know, first guy that comes downfield at you. So it's still fun, I think, because we're all together in this. And if we were doing a league with the other sports games, I think that would also make those even, you know, more exciting for us. But, it's a decent offering. Like I said in my reviews, if this was the Madden that released 2 months ago, I think I myself and many probably would have been satisfied with it. It's just harder going from what we had earlier to this one.
So, Owen Good, I'm obviously very positive on Madden, you know, several weeks into it. Brian obviously is not as much. Where are you on the next gen Madden?
No, I think it's I agree with what Brian said, that if we had gotten the core gameplay that we see in next gen Madden, you know, in last gen Madden, and I'm not sure what it was about previous generation Madden that couldn't handle this, but you know, I'm not a programmer, so I can't speak to why it wasn't in there. But yeah, I mean, I think we would have felt like, even though, you know, the commentary is still a little lackluster and there are some other things that go on in it that we've seen for years, that we could have given it a clean bill of health and said, yes, this is a good improvement over Madden and, you know, it's enjoyable to play. I think it's also, as you said, Rich, you know, it's a slow burn. When you first put it in, you know, my colleagues up in the office in New York were saying, this looks like, you know, PS3 Madden.
Right. It does, in a lot of ways.
Sure. I mean, I think, you know, once people sort of get past the idea that not only are we not seeing, you know, such a profound leap forward in visuals, we also don't have, this is important, you know, the hardware change that made those visuals in the last console changeover so much, you know, more striking, which is going from a standard definition TV to a high definition TV. I think a lot of people forget that. But once you sort of get over that expectation, to get past that and you start playing the game, it is enjoyable. It is a lot of fun. It's more fun and more understandable, I think, than its cousin on the previous generation. So I think it's silly to call a name as big as Madden a sleeper. But in terms of how it makes itself appealing and known to you, I think that's kind of where it lies. You know, we knew We knew NBA was going to be bad, frankly. We knew FIFA and NBA 2K were going to be, you know, good.
Yep.
Although NBA 2K has its issues.
Yep.
And I think Madden might have had a little bit of, because everybody just bashes on it, had a little bit of that working against it, and a big assumption that EA Sports, you know, for some reason would have mailed it in on this. And I don't think they did. I just think what they did do right is a little more subtle.
You know, there's a lot that we can talk about with Madden. We're only going to spend a couple more minutes on it. I mean, a couple things, like from the negative side, yes, the visuals are, you know, in many ways very, very much the same. You know, the commentary is very much the same. And as somebody who has played a lot of Madden 13 and a lot of Madden 25 on the 360 and is now playing a lot of it on the PS4, I am just so happy with when I call a running play that the blocking really is significantly better. When I call a screen pass and I get the pass off on time, my downfield blocking is spectacular. Now, I play a lot with the Eagles, and so LeSean McCoy, you know, gets the ball quite a bit, and I'm really able to do some things in this game with him, for example, that I'm not able to do. I also still don't like playing defense. You know, again, so I guess where I am just been having so much fun is it is solid, it is stable. There aren't nearly as many of the janky physics sort of things. There's not nearly as many of the little bugs. And the other thing is, while I'm thoroughly enjoying it right now, it clearly, to me, also sets a terrific foundation for the next generation moving forward with Madden. Whether that foundation, you know, is executed upon over the course of the next few years obviously remains to be seen. But, you know, that's sort of where I am on it. Brian, take us out on a little more on Madden.
Well, I do want to maybe in a little bit talk about how there's a difference between the PS4 and the Xbox One in how the games play, but... The main thing I want to get back to, though, on why I wasn't thrilled with this version of Madden is because it lacks the thrills, actually. It lacks the excitement that you get in those big kind of rare moments.
That's true.
So, for example, score a goal in the 89th minute in FIFA, and you're out of your seat, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So the first game of our season here in the league, I'm in a situation where it's fourth and goal from the three. I'm down four with just seconds remaining, and I score, and I pass it in, and Percy Harvin catches it for a touchdown, and I win. It did not have the same, the same excitement that you get from those other games, and that's partially because of Living Worlds being a bit of a sham for this first year, and just Madden has always kind of struggled in that area, so that's where it loses me, is more so in the moment than, like you said, a lot of the tactical stuff makes sense or is an improvement.
All right, so that's Madden. And like I said, clearly there was some disagreement among the three of us. Sumit obviously has not played a whole lot of it, so that's okay. But moving to FIFA, when we have first started talking about FIFA, to me that was really one of my first true next-gen experiences, and that really had a lot to do with the fact that I couldn't get NBA 2K to work for me for the first few days. FIFA has been another just wonderful experience for me and continues to be, again, not because it is so wildly different or better than FIFA on the consoles, and the fact that FIFA on the current gen or the 360 PS3 consoles is so good, obviously has a lot of a reason to do that, but because that when you do play it, there is a clear improvement, right? The animations for the players are smoother. The crowds, as Brian just alluded to, the Living Worlds are significantly improved. The fact that when you play the game, you see the crowd, and when you play at Goodison Park or when you play at Emirates Stadium, when you play at different buildings, you feel it's a different experience. To me, FIFA has been just another really fun experience and something that I've been very happy with, on the next gen consoles. Sumit, I know you played a little bit of FIFA on the PS4 and the Xbox One. Has that been your experience as well?
Oh yeah, totally. I think when we discussed FIFA earlier, a couple of weeks ago, you know, I said, you know, you can even tell there's a palpable difference in the gameplay. You know, the momentum is much more keenly felt. You really, if you were running at a dead sprint, you know, sort of down the sideline, and you want to stop on a dime for a cross, that's just not going to happen on next gen. Or, you know, if you're trying to make pass at speed, you know, it's gonna bounce off the dude's foot, or you know unless he's, you know, Leo Messi and is able to trap it. I think FIFA is, I mean, for me, FIFA and NBA, for different reasons, are the two best sports games at launch. I think FIFA sort of seems the most, it's not like wildly different, but I sort of noticed the gameplay differences between the current gen and next gen versions more in FIFA than I did in NBA 2K14. And it's really, and you know, as you said, the Living World stuff, it really adds a lot, because the soccer stadiums are so huge, and you know, you have that scope of the fans.
Yes.
And you know, whenever you have a camera angle where you can see some of the fans, it really, really adds a lot when you have crowds modeled in full 3D.
Yes.
And that's a tremendous addition for sure. It's great.
And you know, and another thing too, both FIFA and Madden for the most part came over completely intact with all of the modes, the teams, the players, and things like that, which is, you know, something that should be expected. You know, and our friend, you know, Mike Phillips from the Player One podcast has said more than a couple times that he actually feels that these next gen games should be additive. And so there's not really additive as far as modes go, but at least both of these games did come over with the complete experience intact from a single player and a multiplayer, for the most part anyway. Brian, I know you've been playing a lot of FIFA as well, and you've been dominating in your online seasons. You know, some of your thoughts on FIFA, you know, again, a couple, two or three weeks into it, now that you've really had some time to sink your teeth into it.
What's interesting to me is, like you said, I'm dominating. I'm not really dominating, but I'm actually, you know, I have a winning record, which has never been the case in the past. And what it feels like to me is that the changes made were, you know, sim in nature, kind of, because I've always tried to play the game like I watch it. So what happens is those tactics that I use, you know, being better able to keep possession, and the better AI from teammates that are CPU controlled, is really, it's paid off, and it's helped me, because my style of play now, apparently I can hang with people and move up. I'm just about ready. I need to play one more game in my second Division 9, and I have like 6 or 7 to do it. I just need to get one more point to move up to the next one. So, you know, it's exciting to be kind of see that the way things have developed and how it's benefited the gameplay, because that's going in, you looked at FIFA and you thought, well, yeah, it doesn't look all that different, but it really is significantly different and for the better.
Now, Owen Good, have you started to make good? Now, it's not the new year, so you technically don't have to have done it yet, but have you started to make good on your New Year's resolution to play a little bit FIFA, or to, you know, really try to get into FIFA a little bit more?
I have actually had to play more of other games that are not sports in nature, just to see what they're all about. So I've been playing Rise and Assassin's Creed and some of those things. I know Assassin's Creed is not, you know, specifically next generation, but I hadn't started playing it yet. No, I haven't gotten back that much into FIFA 2, you know, either. I've still been sticking, you know, frankly, you know, with what I know, which is American football and a little bit of basketball. And it's kind of funny. I was having dinner tonight with a really good friend. He's got a 7-year-old son. Mm. And, you know, his son wants to, in this order, go to college, get a science degree, become a professional soccer player, and then president of the United States.
Nice.
But the key thing is, he wants to be a professional soccer player. But when they sit down to play FIFA together, he, you know, my friend says it's just incredibly discouraging. I know we're talking about a 7-year-old kid trying to manipulate twin analog gamepad. But he says, I mean, it's a very complex game. When you think about it, even when you know what you're looking for, you know, even if, you know, he's talking about his son, you know, trying to play as his team gets on an overlapping run and keeping them on sides. He's frankly delighted that he can get the team on an overlapping run, you know, going down the field. But his son is always discouraged. He's like, Dad, we are never going to score, are we? It raises, you know, but it also raises a question of balance, which is you can't have a FIFA that has 7-1 games.
That's right.
So, you know, and I'm not the 7-year-old who plays soccer every Saturday and, you know, for whom this is my athletic fulfillment right now. And it's just not that accessible to me. I hate to say it. You know, some of it is the intimidation factor of just, again, you know, when I get into a tight at bat, and this is in a set piece game like baseball, I really tighten up and I go, God, I better make this count. And if I don't come through with a hit, it's crushing. And the opportunities to really make something happen in FIFA, you really need a large sample size of playing that game so that when they do come along and you miss them, you go, well, that's just part of the game. And I think that's why it's discouraging, especially to people who have a little bit more of a short attention span when they play video games, me and this 7-year-old kid being among them. But you just need a lot more time with it to let it grow on you. And I have not put that in yet. So that's sort of where I sit with it.
And what's interesting is I'm kind of between both of you. I am very, very, very into English Premier League soccer right now. And I know that I'm going to be into the World Cup. So from a awareness of soccer, I'm much more acutely aware and watch games now on a regular basis, much more than I did even a few years ago. But on the other hand, when it comes to actually playing FIFA, I'm still terrible at it. And when I play online seasons, I've tweeted about this, like I literally lose every single game when I play an online season.
Yeah, that's got to be discouraging.
It's incredibly discouraging. When I play offline and I play on semi-professional, I can win handily. When I play on professional, if I do every single thing right and get a few breaks, I will win. But I am just not there yet when it comes to being able to play. And I love online seasons because you don't have the scheduling challenge difficulties when you play in an online league. And you also, because of the way that you get matched up by what level you are, you tend to play somebody who, at least in theory, is your type of level of player. But no matter what, I still lose every single one of the games, and it's very discouraging. But I have seen my friends like Brian Weedye and like Kat Bailey, who's been on the show, have learned how better to play the game and have gotten better. And I know it can be done, and I don't know if I have it in me to keep doing it, especially when I am having so much fun playing Madden Next Gen and NBA 2K Next Gen. I don't know. I believe I am, because I think there's going to be a pretty significant amount of time between. There's going to be a whole lot of new experiences to have on these consoles. I love the game, and I love playing offline because I can sort of know that I can have a more positive experience. But it still remains, in a lot of ways, extremely difficult to me, again, playing those online seasons. So let's move into NBA 2K14, because of all of the games, this is by far the most vexing. Because when it comes to the actual playing of the basketball, it is, to me, the most next-gen type of game, of the list. You know, it looks great, especially when you look at the players, you know, the way that the ball, the way that the players interact with each other, you know, the commentary, the visuals, the crowd sounds, and everything is so good. And yet, the lack of online leagues and the tremendous amount of issues they've had with, you know, the connection to the servers and the VC stuff that we're going to talk about. It's like, man, for all of the good, there's so much frustrating that is bad. And some of it can be patched. Some of it is pure design. Man, this game is a bipolar game. I'm going to start with you, Sumit. You've done or are working on a review for it. Where are you on NBA 2K14?
Yeah, I'm in the same boat as you. I think it's fantastic to look at and play. I feel like it's the most it looks and feels like the most next gen game, maybe of not just sports games, but maybe of any of the games that are available.
Yeah, you can definitely make that case, I think.
Yeah, I think it looks the best. I mean, I think this, it's between this and Forza, and honestly, I think it is much more difficult, or not much, but it's more difficult to make a simulation sports game look great than it is to make a racing game look great.
Totally.
So, that's certainly super awesome. And as you said, the gameplay is, you know, while not leaps and bounds better than the last gen gameplay, you know, it is better in a few ways. I just feel like the changes that they implemented in the current gen game this year, or the last gen game this year, the stuff they did with, I don't know, the ball seemed more alive to me, and I felt like it was harder this year to just sort of drive at people and just drive into the lane, you know, without getting punished. And if that seems more, a little bit more pronounced on next gen. Yeah, I mean, there is a lot of stuff about it that's off-putting. I mean, 2K Online has always been kind of shaky, and I don't know about you guys, but I have not been able to get into a single game of the park. It's so glitchy. It's just like I'm walking around this virtual playground with all these other My Player characters, and it says, you know, you have to press X to queue up to, you know, to say I got next, and I press X and he gets in a line and then he just walks away from the court. And without me doing anything, like I'm not pressing any buttons, I'm standing in line and then he just walks off the line. And I've never gotten into a game of the park. I also just played a couple of, you know, regular online games, and you know, the lag wasn't egregious, but if you're playing with timing based shooting, it's persistent enough to throw off the timing of your shots, which really affects the experience. And I did also see some instances of, you know, the game was sort of momentarily freezing and then like fast forwarding to catch up online. You know, there's other stuff. I think, you know, we'll get into the VC and things like that. It's a weird dichotomy between, you know, what's awesome and what's not about the game. I do, my favorite thing in this game, and my favorite thing probably in any of the NBA 2K games now, at least since like the historic stuff, the Jordan Challenge stuff, is My Career. I think it's a really, really great thing they did, but, you know, by turning it into a story based mode. That's mostly what I've been playing. I actually, you know, haven't had the chance to yet, but I want to go back and continue my rivalry with Jackson Ellis.
Yeah,
that yeah. Jerk. So that stuff is really fantastic. My GM, I think, is less successful, but, you know, we can get into that later.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going back and forth. Like when I play the game, I usually play 15 to 30 minutes of My Player, and then I hop over and I play a game in a season because I had so many troubles with my GM just literally to get it to work. I'm playing a season with Denver, and I've also got my GM going with Minnesota, which I've started a couple times. Like I'm really enjoying multiple aspects of the game. Oh, and how has your NBA 2K14 experience been?
Well, my experience has been a lot of people filling up my inbox with complaints about VC. That's sort of the squeaky wheel getting a lot of the grease there. I'm more of a My Career player, and I appreciate what they've done there. And I think that it, again, is straight from the 2K playbook of, I mean, you know, I don't know that they get enough credit for how hard they think about some of these things sometimes, and they put a lot of thought and care into My Player, which makes it mystifying to me, their decision with VC. I don't think that they set up their virtual credit cash system, whatever it is, with the intent of chiseling players or forcing them to pay to be any good. But it certainly feels that way, especially when, you know, the way that they – I'm still kind of baffled – by how they require, why they didn't just say, okay, you can play the game offline and you don't earn any VC. And I guess that's got to do with, you know, some of the things in career mode, especially in my GM mode, requiring VC to execute, you know, training up your players and things like that. But, you know, again, this gets back to, it really puts the game in a bad light when you've got a virtual economy that not only shuts out large portions of the game if you cannot connect to the 2K servers, I believe. I mean, if we resolved this, can you maintain two separate save files and get around that?
So I actually looked in that, you know, for my review. Yeah, it's totally – I started up the game with the servers – or with my PS4 disconnected from the internet. And I think I mentioned it on the last show because that's what I was doing when I was reviewing it on PS3 initially, because I couldn't connect to the 2K servers for the early part of the review period, the pre-release review period on PS3. So yeah, I was able to start up in my career. What they – again, they don't really clarify this. They don't make it clear to players. And one thing I did mention in my review is I think as much as I have despised 2K Nav over the years, they somehow managed to make the menus worse and more confusing in this game.
Yeah, and that's it seems like such a petty thing to complain about there. But if you know, to the average user, it certainly presents it as very monolithic. If you can't connect to the 2K servers, you can do Play Now or you can do or you know, some of the games, you know, out of that mode, and that's it. And
that's
and
what
so,
it seems like, yeah.
They, as I said, you know, they have set themselves. If this game had anything other than a sterling reputation built up over the years coming into this, I mean, they'd be getting hammered on it. Mm. And they are getting hammered on it. You know, again, as people complain about, you know, connectivity to the servers. So I don't think they did themselves a lot of favors in that. And I think Brian might be able to speak a little bit more to, you know, some of the online features or lack thereof. It remains very solid in the gameplay, and it certainly is distinct, and it does feel like the most next-gen game. But they did some un-2K things in how this gets along with your new online life on the PS4 and the Xbox One.
Yeah, and one of the things that I was looking forward to more than almost anything else was playing an online league in NBA 2K with you guys. And we're doing it with Madden, and you know, we've already talked about how kind of fun that is. The fact is, you basically, for lack of a better term, and you cannot play an online league in NBA 2K. Brian, what is going on with that?
Well, I think they put in online leagues as a bullet point for the features, but it was a throw-in. It's not designed in any way for anyone to actually maintain a successful league. Anyone who's run leagues before will go into it and immediately say, this is never going to work. You can't, you know, as a commissioner, you can't do pretty much anything that you would expect to be able to do. And even settings like you can't change the quarter length for games. It's not a mess. It's just so thin that it makes almost no sense to even be included in the product. The only reason I can think they have it is because they wanted to be able to advertise it because they don't have online association anymore. But I mean, it's interesting if you look at some of the modes that didn't get, you know, the love that some of the that my GM and my career did, it's because they don't have VC. It's how they can't monetize online leagues, so why are they going to bother with it? And that's one of the, you know, the distressing things about the way the direction of this product. And it started out as I thought 2K14 was the best of the bunch, and with stuff that's developed post release and kind of this VC realization, it's definitely fallen down my list.
You know, and when you talk about VC and you talk about Forza microtransactions and you talk about, you know, Power Star Golf, which is a game that I've started playing, you know, which also has the ability to really just buy lots and stuff. It does raise into question, you know, which we're not going to get into tonight because, you know, it could be its own show, but a very troubling trend when you're already shelling out all of this money for these games to then have to pay money or come close to having to pay even more money, as opposed to having it be a new, you know, there's a difference between microtransactions and DLC. And it just really feels like we're in a very ugly place right now with full priced games and the microtransactions. So
if I was a parent, I'd be furious. You know, I buy the $60 game and this console for my kid who really enjoys basketball, who really enjoys, you know, cars, if it's we're talking about Forza.
Right.
And it's like, and that's not good enough. And I've got my kid asking, you know, why can, you know, can he just chisel $2 off of my credit card so he can have an XP bonus? What the hell is an XP bonus on Forza? I mean, I would really be upset if I was a parent.
Yeah, and as my son and I are playing Super Mario 3D Land a lot, nobody appreciates the fact that that is a full game that does not ask me for money. Because yeah. We're having a blast playing it, and there's none of that. But
and look, with VC and 2K14, I mean, it hasn't gotten the publicity of Forza, obviously, but maybe it should have. I mean, you have my team, which you literally cannot really play without paying money. Unlike EA's Ultimate Teams, where you're not going to, you know, be as successful or in building a team as people who pay, but you can keep going in that. And then you've got my GM, which you have to play the games to be able to progress. You can't sim like a lot of people like to do, and you have to spend your VC to unlock functions,
like that basic functions, not advanced, basic stuff.
And if you don't, if you don't doing it, you risk getting fired. So basically, you have to pay there. And then in my player, you're my player. Either you're spending money to progress your ratings, or you're spending money on stuff like clothes because you can't do both.
Well, so that was my biggest problem with the VC implementation in 2K14 here. So like I said, I'm really engrossed in my career. I think that, you know, the scaling there of the payouts for the games is, you know, reasonable. Yeah. Like
It's gotten worse though. It was years ago, and even earlier this year on current gen, you got more for playing games than you do now.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's still like sort of a reasonable, but I feel like if it got much worse. I mean, it really does depend on your performance. I mean, if you turn in a bad game, you're like, well, crap. You know, I didn't really earn anything out of that. And, you know, luckily I don't feel compelled to spend money on new kicks or whatever. But it really is a problem in my GM, I think, because there the economy scaling is screwed up. But even aside from the payouts is the issue of what you brought up, Brian, is that traditionally I think there are a lot of players in these kinds of modes, you know, the season mode, the franchise modes, the owner modes, that like to be an overseer, right? That like to set up their team, hire staff, set ticket prices and concession prices, and then they don't so much care about playing the games. They just want to sort of sim out the season and see what happens. You can't do that, because you only earn VC when you actually play the regular season games. I think the only – I mean, this might not be true, but I believe the only other way to earn VC is to, you know, fulfill the goals that your owner sets for you.
And it's a minuscule amount. It's a minuscule amount.
Yeah. 200. It's not even like a – it's not even – like one goal might get you 200 VC, which is not even the amount you'd get for playing one regular season game. It becomes a real problem – not just because of the fact that you can't get VC by simming, but also because of the scaling of the economy, whereby you start out, you know, all you do is you pick one of like six or seven different like sort of personalities as a GM, like, you know, you're a sharp business guy or whatever, and or you're a good trainer or something. But all that does is gives you a discount on the upgrades that you would purchase for your abilities in that track. You still have to buy those things, and they're pretty expensive, you know, like, and as Rich was saying, it's basic stuff, you know, where you are, there's so much in the mode you'll see where it's like, oh, you can't set your ticket prices until you get to level 3 in, you know, facilities or whatever, or you can't change the rotation of your basketball team's, like, you know, lineups until you're level 1 in that, and that might cost 500 VC, it might cost 800 VC, it might cost 1,000 VC. So, you know, do the math. You're playing minimum of like whatever 3 to 5 games before you can even change your lineups. So I think that stuff is really weird, the way they've locked away that kind of content, and it really seems, you know, I don't like to assume, you know, intent either way, but that stuff really reeked to me of being designed to push people at least in the direction of making that in-game purchase.
Okay, so we all know that sports games are the best games, but there's a lot of other great video games out there too, and no better way to keep up with them than the Weekend Confirmed podcast. Since 2006, host Garnet Lee has kept listeners up to date with everything from AAA to indie, news, commentary, analytical discussion, and of course lots of hands-on time with games in the legendary What You've Been Playing. Jeff Cannata joins Garnet as co-host of Weekend Confirmed, bringing the whimsy and keeping things always upbeat. And a rotating group of video game industry vets from both the media and the studio round out the show each week. It's like getting to sit in and listen to a weekly meetup of video game friends talking about the things they love the most. Available each Friday at 11 a.m. Pacific, subscribe to the Weekend Confirmed podcast today to join the gang. Available on iTunes, your favorite RSS podcast player, or directly from shacknews.com. All right, so moving from the fourth story of the year to the third. Tiger Woods, the end of the Tiger Woods series, the extended hiatus of EA's golf series. This is something, Owen, that you initially reported on, and obviously as the story unfolded, a lot of details came out, none of which we were particularly happy with, again, as people who make our living in this place. So, Owen, just, you know, where are you now right now? How do you feel? What's your overall take on what's happened with EA's golf and the end of the Tiger Woods series?
Well, obviously, in console gaming, you know, for the core audience or the mid-core audience, since we're all into labeling constituencies here, which would be, you know, most of your simulation sports, golf is even an outlier within sports gaming. But that said, it has been a significant franchise. I think it was 16 years that Tiger Woods had a partnership with EA Sports. And it really, I think one thing that may not be as appreciated is how it focused attention to golf as like something other than just sort of this sport that, you know, doesn't have a face or doesn't have something recognizable to draw you to it other than, you know, whether it was the PGA Tour licensing, whatever. I mean, when you think about something like Top Spin or Grand Slam tennis, I mean, the attraction there is you want to play tennis. Right. But with golf, it was like, oh, I'm going to play with the superstar or with the guy who is absolutely dominating this game and is larger than, you know, the tour itself. It's not just sort of this loose thing. I mean, as an individual sport, I think that's, You can have a league when you're a team sport because people have favorite teams. An individual sport is a little bit more diffuse. So, but at the same time, I don't think that Tiger Woods departing the series is something that damages it to the point where it can't be brought back. Obviously, they are going to bring it back. We saw that they're working on next generation screens for it already. It's just from what I understand, it's not going to be back next year. And it might be the kind of thing that without a I'm assuming it's still going to go forward under PGA Tour branding, but it might be the kind of thing that without a titular sponsor, it becomes an every other year series like Fight Night, like Top Spin was with 2K, although it was a little longer than every other year on 2K. And that also might be something that's sort of pointed at a digitally distributed game, obviously, as the core the next gen consoles are pointed more there. What they went out on, I feel again, is a good game. I certainly still play it a lot, although it does have its issues. Its commentary is, my God, you know, you get deep into your career if you're playing four round events as I do, and you know, I like David Faraday, and, you know, I don't know. I don't get the hatred for Jim Nance, but he doesn't piss me off the way he does some other people. But they definitely will grade on you by the end of the year. I think it's just more of a question. EA Sports is going to get out of this. What they're going to get out of this is they won't have to pay as much in licensing for a game that had wrung just about every last bit of feature value out of that Tiger Woods association. I mean, they were really scraping when you were hitting as, you know, 3-year-old Tiger on the set of the Mike Douglas Show.
Yeah.
Last year. And as I've pointed out or argued before, and I think others agree, you know, this is not a game where playing as Tiger Woods matters as much as playing as yourself. And so that means the courses really are the star of the show. And once they got Augusta National in this, and then once they finally got all four majors in this to give you a true career experience, I think they realized just how, not irrelevant, but how he became a nice-to-have feature as opposed to a need-to-have feature. And then finally, you know, I know a lot of people have said, I think, you know, or some, you know, Darren Rovell said something about Tiger Woods as people talking about making a video game. I'd really like to see what that is because creating and laying out these courses is a tremendous barrier to entry, especially if you were going to do it for PS4 or Xbox One. And I don't know how many of those courses are under exclusive arrangement.
Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty sure Augusta is, and good luck competing with that.
So we interrupt this Tiger Woods story to introduce a man who is just starting to get a taste of the sweet, delicious misery that comes from being a fan of an Andy Reid-coached NFL team. The executive editor of Operation Sports, Mr. Chris Sander. Chris, welcome to the show. Glad you could make it, my friend.
I have no idea how far you guys are into the show. I honestly have no idea about anything. All I know is for the last hour, I have been lamenting, actually hour and a half, I've been lamenting the fact that I don't have internet. We had a slight power bump, and that really just, I guess, messed the whole system up or something. I've tried resetting my router like 8 times. I've tried restarting my computers, and nothing works. So I just finally just gave up there for a little bit. And finally, as of 5 minutes ago, I believe I am back amongst those who are online.
Well,
so
you are here. And you will be able to join us for the rest of the conversation. So
yes.
So Brian Wiedei, again, just like everybody else, you've been tracking, following the Tiger Woods story and the fact that he's you know, not only not going to have his name on the game, but also he will actually not even be in the game. There have also been rumors that he could be trying to score deals with other companies, you know. Where does the Tiger Woods golf story and EA's golf sit with you as we close out 2013?
When I look at, you know, his involvement in the game and his importance to the marketing, at this point, you know, he was getting over $16 million a year in that contract. At this point, I can see why EA wouldn't be able to justify that. A few years ago, back before his, you know, all his transgressions became public, it was a huge seller, and it was the biggest seller on the Wii of all consoles, actually. And it's a family-friendly kind of consumer base there. And for this game, as much as, you know, as hardcore sports gamers, we think of a certain demographic, maybe it's not. Tiger was one that reached, you know, older men. It reached, you know, women buying it for their husbands or for their kids. And you know, and then this year they tried to reach out even to women with the LPGA and everything. But yeah, I don't think they could justify that cost for Tiger to be just on the cover of the game. I think it does hurt that he's not in the game anymore completely. I think that will hurt some, but not $16 million worth of some. And as a title, as a golf game or any sports game that doesn't really necessitate a yearly roster update where you have that turnover, it may be better as a bi-yearly release, or at least in taking this year off and coming back strong, it could be worthwhile. We'll just have to see.
You know, Owen mentioned the fact that Tiger in many ways had some issues. Certainly there have been plenty of stories, but we do know that really it got patched once and there remained a vocal group of people who had significant issues that were not patched again. So part of me feels, though, that by the time 2015 rolls around and there has not been a close to sim golf game on the console, if EA Sports is ready to actually release this game, there could be quite a bit of pent up demand and it could actually be beneficial. Chris Sander, where are you with not only with Tiger Woods sort of ending in 2013 and EA Sports taking an extended hiatus with their golf game, but also, you know, what the future is for, you know, PGA golf on, you know, the PS4 and the Xbox One moving forward.
Well, I know they can't flub this much more than they have the NBA Live in its 3-year absence or whatever it was. So, I mean, I feel pretty good about that. But I think, you know, Tiger, the name is, it probably moves some units and such. And it definitely, I mean, it's a much better name than PGA Tour or whatever, in my opinion. But I don't think Tiger as far as a part of the game isn't a big deal. I'll echo Owen's sentiment on that. I think, you know, you want good courses, that sort of thing, more so than Tiger Woods. Generally, I think that the future, it just depends on where EA wants to take this title, that sort of thing. If we're looking at if they want to do, you know, a realistic season mode, that sort of thing, or, you know, work through the FedEx Cup, I'd just be interested to see, one, what kind of demand there is for a game like that, especially without Tiger Woods in it. I think it's probably not much more than without, you know, that sort of thing. And also, I guess I would also be interested in seeing just how this game, where the series goes from here, because, I mean, graphically, I'm sure it's going to be absolutely gorgeous. But and the series has really recreated itself as a sim at this point. But I'm just interested to see what kind of demand there is in 2 years for this game, or I guess a year and a half, however long it is until spring 2015, I'm assuming, when this will be released. So it'll be interesting to see where this goes from here for sure.
Well, the other thing that's interesting to me is I broke down a couple days ago and bought Power Star Golf. It is, you know, the only golf game you can play on the next generation consoles. And I haven't played it that much, but I've spent, you know, I don't know, 45 minutes or so playing it. And one of the things that I noticed right away, in addition to how, you know, it looks good, it's not, you know, a sim game by any stretch, but it is a golf game. Like, you do need to have, you know, judge the wind and take the right type of shot and things like that. But there's a really interesting social aspect with your friends. Like, you see on every hole, you know, which one of your friends has gotten the ball closest to the pin, and you can, you know, sort of get extra XP if you beat that and things like that. There's interesting social aspects to Power Star Golf that I was thinking, boy, if EA could come up with a really interesting way to integrate those kinds of things in their next golf game, that would also be, you know, an opportunity, especially, you know, when I could be, line up at Augusta and I could, you know, be trying to get over Amen Corner and, you know, see where Owen landed his shot and where Brian landed his and Chris and Submit, and be like, wow, I saw what those guys can do. I want to beat that. There's definitely some opportunities, I think, and I'm definitely hopeful for where Tiger is and you know, Submit. So, our, you know, as we sort of close out the Tiger Woods story, do you think it is as devastating, perhaps, as, you know, what we're going to talk about in a little bit with NCAA, or do you think they're actually probably lining themselves up a little better for the future?
I think, certainly it's not nearly as dire straits as NCAA is at this point. As Owen pointed out, you know, I think, you know, EA, for as much as, you know, you might want to say, you know, who knows what the motives are, but, you know, I take them at their word when they say it was, you know, sort of the both parties, you know, mutually decided to end their arrangement. I think they both realized, both, you know, Tiger's people and EA, that their arrangement had kind of run its course. It really seemed like EA, ever since the scandal broke back in 2009 or whatever it was, you know, they were sort of slowly, as much as their PR people denied it, you know, slowly trying to distance themselves from Tiger. You know, they minimized his image on the cover. You know, they minimized even the appearance of, like, the font size of his name on the covers of you know, subsequent games following the scandals. And beyond that, I'm sure I had never heard that it was that the license cost $16 million a year. That seems absolutely bonkers. And certainly that seems like a major factor in why they would shut it down. But what I'll say here, you know, quickly is I feel like, you know, when EA brings this game back, you know, considering the the way they were doing DLC with the courses, and you know, as Owen is saying, you know, the courses really were the star of the game. I don't see any reason that they wouldn't do this, which is to say that they'll just release it as a, you know, not necessarily free-to-play thing, but a sort of budget price title. Maybe it's $20 with a few courses, and then, you know, it's just sort of, you know, you microtransaction your way through the rest of it. That seems like, you know, if they were getting out of this arrangement to sort of try and save a bunch of money, you know, that seems like a better way, especially, you know, at 2015, you know, these consoles will have been out for a long time, and people will really have become accustomed to you know, buying digital games by then. It seems like a no-brainer for them to try that as a business model, especially if, you know, because it allows them to not have something on an annual basis.
So, Owen, close us out on the end of the Tiger Woods and the future of golf. Do you think ultimately that we'll be in a better place as people who love to play golf on consoles in a couple of years, or are you more concerned about this than hopeful?
Well, I hadn't really considered what Sumit brought up there, but I think he raises a valid point, which is, yes, they very well could be into providing a framework that, you know, upsells you through to courses that, you know, you want to play to round out whatever your tour events. On one hand, it's fine. If all you ever want to do is play Pebble Beach and Augusta National, great. And on the other hand, it's kind of concerning because if you're taking that kind of an approach to this, you're not putting a lot of other features into the game because it's harder to sell those things. Or you are just creating something that people feel like they're getting chiseled out of. So if they are going in that direction, I mean, that really is then they would be cutting back staff. And I don't think that they are because, you know, there's I mean, I don't know what it takes in terms of manpower. I wrote about what it took to scan in a course like Augusta National, but again, I don't work down there. Well, I don't work down there. I don't know exactly what it does take to put these courses into the game. My guess is it takes a heck of an investment in time, and especially if you've got to re-render all this stuff for even, you know, a higher definition. So I think they're in for a dollar, they're going to make a full title. Because you've also got on the back of this, you know, Kinect 2.0, which doesn't blow up my skirt nor really anybody else's, but there are people other than us who buy this game and maybe it will, you know, create something that is even mildly playable down the line. I mean, I thought, you know, this thing with PlayStation Move and Tiger Woods PGA Tour 12 was going to be something, you know, fun or worth a damn, you know, to go out and swat the ball around, aim in corner, and it still was just a janky experience to me. But who knows? It's still out there, and it's still something I can sell into. I think we will get a full title when this thing does return.
So at least we believe it exists, unlike the number two sports game story of the year, which is really a combination of a couple of things, but it's all related to baseball. But few of us will forget the experience that was MLB 2K13. Unlike, for example, NBA Live, which came out and just has a ton of issues, MLB 2K13 was a perfectly functional game with many modes and many features that we were all very familiar with. So familiar with, as a matter of fact, that it was, as much as you could possibly do it, it was a literal copy and paste of MLB 2K12, with the only differences that anybody could tell being the Houston Astros were moved into the appropriate league and given the right uniforms, and there were roster updates to reflect the current rosters as of spring training, and they removed online leagues. Other than that, it was literally the same game. And as people who love sports game and who loathe the term roster updates and can't stand when people on NeoGAF or various other forums and immediately dismiss things that we spend lots of time and energy and money on, it was an absolute slap in the face to all of us. We all covered it in various shapes and sizes. I think nobody covered it quite the way that you did, Owen Good, in your review for Kotaku. So we'll go around the horn, but what will you remember about MLB 2K13, not only when you first got your hands on it, but also now looking back in the prism of the end of the year? So start with you, Owen.
I won't remember that much because I don't think I've played it since March.
Hmm.
I mean, I might have gone downstairs to put something in if I was looking to get a screen grab or to see if anything had changed to reflect the league. Brian, you're the guy who watches all the patches. Did this thing even get a patch?
No, okay. Not one. And first of all, they would have waited for their $1 million contest time frame to run out before they patched it, of course. And then after that, no. I mean, I haven't checked because I only played it the first day enough to see that it was the same game. But I'm guessing it didn't get roster updates either, at least any time recently.
Yeah, and that, it for me, I mean, we can urinate on the grave of MLB 2K13 as the day is long and feel real good about that and get a big standing ovation from our constituencies for doing so. For me, the real story is, what is Major League Baseball's plan for Microsoft consoles? Because that's not some boutique device. That's a pretty large market, and they have no presence in it. Or if they do, they're going to be coming to it extraordinarily late in the game. And I can understand why, in hindsight, the MLB 2K13 thing, we thought that series was dead and there would be no baseball on Xbox 360 until, January. Lo and behold, we had a last-minute deal. And that's because they had to let the clock run out, which was to the end of December, even if the game published in the preceding March. But they had to let the clock run out on the last deal. Well, they didn't have to do it, on this deal. I would assume that this was not an exclusive. So if somebody wanted to step in and really build a game for the Xbox 360 or, God forbid, the Xbox One, they would have been working on it by now. And we would have heard something about that by now because Sony has already shown its hand, for MLB The Show. It continues to be, I'm trying not to make too many declarative pronouncements on this that there will be nothing or, lead pipe lock or whatever. But I still see absolutely no evidence that Major League Baseball has any kind of a plan to get themselves out of the quicksand is created by this. And it wasn't even a full exclusive, but this deal that just shackled them to a, 2K Sports that couldn't just, I mean, it's not like they did nothing right. And as I've said in other reviews, the pitching system on this, if they took those gestures and put them in MLB The Show, I mean, I'd never leave my basement. There are things that are done right in this game. But on the whole, there are a lot of things that are done that just remind you you're playing a video game and you're not immersed in, any kind of a sporting contest, certainly not the way that The Show does. But to get back to the original point, I was scathing in my condemnation of this.
Yes.
And, and I know people who work for Visual Concepts, and I know people who worked on this game. And I was angry, not only because it was an insult to the gaming public and to longtime consumers, and especially to baseball fans who had no other option because they own an Xbox 360. I felt it also just... it ended on the worst note possible and took a crap all over the work of, guys who did do a good job and did do the best they could with what they had, like Sean Bailey at Visual Concepts. And it assured that we would always remember this game as something contemptible. And I feel sorry for the guys who worked on it.
Chris Sanner, what was the reaction of the Operation Sports community when it first came out, and your reaction as well, and sort of how will you remember MLB 2K13?
I'll remember it first because there was a wave of denial. People, I don't know if you guys even remember this, but people were literally finding things that weren't there that were different with the game just to kind of justify the fact they just spent $60 on. I mean, literally, yeah. You would be amazed some of the things people found that they thought they found that were different in this year's game that actually were the exact same as 2K12. Personally, I really enjoyed playing MLB 2K12. I mean, 2K12. I don't know. They were the same game, this game really did this final game in the series. So we think it really did lay just a big black cloud over the whole series, because you had, first off, I mean, you guys remember when it debuted on consoles, the 360, PS3. Oh my gosh, this game was a mess. Literally, it was like it was NBA Live kind of messy. I mean, I guess NBA Live's now an adjective to describe bad games, I guess. But it was really, really bad. This series was in dire straits, and they turned it around. They did some things. They used, you know, the analog pitching was brilliant, still is. And honestly, I am in awe about how this was allowed to happen. But from you know, on so many different levels. I know why it happened. I'm just shocked that it was allowed to happen and there wasn't more foresight from Major League Baseball, because they're the ones that I feel like deserve the blame here. 2K, they do deserve some of the blame for sure as well, for basically going along with the plan and seeing a chance to make a quick and easy buck. But Major League Baseball for not having a plan and painting themselves in a corner and not realizing that Major League Baseball isn't the NFL and there's not that much of a demand for it compared to football. It just really, this whole thing was just a mess. And I think even on Operation Sports, people see it as that. And I know right now, if you hop on Operation Sports, you'll be shocked. It'll be shocking if you see more than, you know, two or three people in the MLB 2K forum, as opposed to, you know, like still 60, 70 in the show forum. So, I mean, that's just, that'll tell you where that game was this year.
So before we move on to our number one story, real quick, submit any sort of lasting images you have of MLB 2K13, and really, frankly, the MLB 2K series as a whole.
Yeah, well, first off, I will say that it, you know, Owen's completely right. It's a real damn shame, you know, the way 2K did baseball, not just this year, but I feel like it was a pretty you know, mediocre to subpar product over the course of this entire console generation. I mean, the show didn't really get its stuff together until MLB 08. You know, that was sort of the first great MLB the Show game. But, you know, I felt like, you know, MLB 2K7 and such, you know, those games were never really all that good. I mean, they certainly had good parts, as you guys have mentioned. It's a shame, certainly not just, you know, certainly for the games, you know, for our sort of lasting memories of this series and end of baseball, of 2K baseball on this console generation, but for the future, you know, I really wonder what kind of impact it's going to have for PS4 sales. I mean, you know, you always heard that the show was a system seller for you know, because baseball fans in the know were going to get the show. That was unintended, but it worked out nicely. And you know, people have known for a long time, if they're following PS4 and Xbox One, that there probably isn't going to be, you know, a baseball game outside, a simulation baseball game at least, outside of the show next spring. So I would imagine that anybody who's really a hardcore baseball fan is interested in buying a baseball game next year has gotten a PS3 or is going to get one, you know, next March. Last thing I will say, it was particularly galling after all of this, after the fiasco that game launched as MLB 2K13. It's really galling to see it as a damn lightning deal during Black Friday week on Amazon for $19.99.
Get for 19? Oh, God.
Yeah, I put out a PSA on my Twitter where, you know, even before I knew what the price was, I was like, oh, they're going to put this on a lightning deal to get rid of some stock? Don't buy it. It's worth zero of your dollars.
Yeah, right. And all you're doing is a favor to Amazon.
All right. So the number one story, as voted on by the esteemed panel here, is the end of NCAA football. Obviously, a very sad story, frankly, for all of us, for different reasons too. In particular, I mean, all of us have different perspectives on this. I'm going to start with you, Chris Sanner. You, I know, are a big college football fan. how does the end of the NCAA series affect you personally, and how does it affect, frankly, your livelihood as the executive editor of Operation Sports?
You know, honestly, this is, as far as just a business thing, it's one of the toughest things we've dealt with since I've come to Operation Sports, what, 6 years ago? 6 years ago, something like that. Personally, this is how this game, this series is how I got started into gaming, sports gaming journalism, and then just journalism as a whole. This game really started me down that path, and or this series, and to see it go is incredibly, to me, very saddening, very, you know, I am furious in some respects, just because, you know, I don't know, I guess that's part of the five stages of grief. I'm in the angry stage at some times. So, you know, but this game has, this series being gone represents a lot for myself. It represents, you know, a lot of fun, a lot of hours played. I have a lot of, you know, countless memories over the last decade or so of playing this game series. I have loved it. You know, it's been better at times than it was. It's been really good at times. But the big thing is, I guess, is that for, you know, if you're running a sports gaming only site, This is your July, you know, for us, this was our July. And so now you got to scramble, you got to think, and I, you know, I can't give away too much, but, you know, suddenly you've got one out of your 11 months or 12 months. I guess there's 12 months in a year. I don't know how that I messed that up. But anyways, you know, this is one of your 12 months out of the year, you know, that you, the big traffic draw that month, that's just gone. And so now you've got to think about how to adjust to that. And business wise, that's not easy.
No,
it's definitely not easy. So we're making strides. We're working together a plan. I'll say this has been some of the most stressful months since this game's been announced as canceled that I've had here at OS, just because I have been you're working on hard on trying to get everything together and to make sure that you can absorb this impact, this body blow, especially when you just take into account just how the sports game sold this year. I mean, it really was just kind of one of those just kind of blah years when it comes to that sort of thing. And yeah, this game series being gone is a huge blow for me for passion, first off, because, you know, the NCAA always got me in the mood for sports games in July. I don't know why. It just did. It was the first
blow. It was the start of the year, frankly, right?
And now we got Madden to start the year, which is fine. I love Madden. I love where Madden has gone this year, but to me, we're going to lose something without July's, if you get what I'm saying. We really are. We don't realize it yet, but we really did lose something special.
Now, Owen Good, you have got a different relationship with NCAA football. Not only have you spoken in the past about how it really sort of, if not established, reignited your love of sports games, but you've actually spent some time with the guys making the game. One of the many great stick jockeys that you wrote was the description of you and Ben Howe Miller recording audio during a particularly wild three game swing. I mean, how does the cancellation of NCAA affect you personally and professionally?
Well, I'll start with the professional end of things as opposed to the personal. I mean, I've got thoughts about this. I'll start with the personal. My personal thought is this was the year in which I was forced to reconcile a lot of my strident attitudes about how the NCAA treats college football players in particular, but athletes in money-making sports in general, with essentially being part of the problem, which is a consumer of, you know, a sports video game that abuses this whole, you know, right to control one's likeness in the first place. I mean, it fundamentally did. Now, you know, the blame is what is everybody's pointing fingers about. And obviously EA Sports wouldn't be settling things to the tune of $40 million if it didn't feel it was culpable in this. I think ultimately it's the NCAA's antiquated policies that let everybody down this road. But to peel back from that, if you're talking about a product that makes you feel bad as a person, and I'm not saying that I speak for a majority, and I'm not saying that other people had feelings that really were as profound, but if you're talking about a product that makes you feel bad as a person is particularly for all of the negative publicity that is coming off of the NCAA, you know, in this time. The lawsuit be damned, it might have been a better time to go ahead and take a step back from this and shut the thing down until people could feel good about consuming these kinds of products generally and on the whole. Again, I think it will return, but it's going to have to return after all of this legal stuff sorts itself out and the NCAA figures out how it can honorably and ethically do its business while still giving its athletes, you know, the basic dignity of deciding whether or not they want to participate in some of these things that they have been participating in, whether they were, you know, it was just, you know, a highlight DVD of something they did on the field, but it was resold, not part of the television broadcast package, or whether it is, you know, appearing in a video game. So that's sort of, that's one personal feeling I have. You know, on the whole, my other feeling is that EA Tiburon is hurting, and it needs a hit, and it is in for a very long winter, which is stretching from now until next August, because they don't have Tiger Woods, and they don't have NCAA football. And the next thing they're going to be putting out that we know of, unless they got something else on the shelf, is Madden NFL 15, 26.
26, yeah.
Yeah. You know, next year, and then after that is NBA Live 15, one assumes. And they've shed so many jobs down there. I mean, I know I'm not trying to cry crocodile tears for people who make video games. They're hurting. And the NCAA, the loss of NCAA, you know, when they talk about Cam Weber, who is general manager for all of football up there, you know, shedding tears as he makes the announcement, I believe that. That had to be an extremely tough thing for anyone down there to swallow, whether they worked on that team or not. And then, you know, they'd been laying off people in that studio even before that announcement was made, going back to the shakeup in the spring. It is the number one sports story of this year. I'll tie it off of this. It's the number one sports video gaming story of this year because of how it ties into, frankly, what is going to end up being the number one sports story of a 3 to 5 year span once we know what the NCAA is going to do to survive in a manner in which it is not getting sued over the basic events it stages, which is what this is all about right now. And they've got to figure that out. I mean, whether or not they prevail in this and whether they've threatened to sue up to the Supreme Court and whether they win there, they've got to figure out what their strategy is going forward. And when they decide that, and I think it will be something that allows athletes to be compensated by a third-party sponsor up to a capped amount, and when they figure that out and get that right with Title IX, it will change college sports fundamentally, and a video game will have been one of the catalysts in doing so. So I think that's why it's as good as any as a number one story of the year.
Brian Weedy, what ultimately does the cancellation of the NCAA football series mean to you? Again, as another person who makes your living covering, discussing, playing, and reporting on sports video games, and the folks who come to your site in no small amount because of the existence of NCAA football.
Well, in the case of NCAA, I had already anticipated this outcome. I think, you know, my feeling initially within the last year was that we'd get one next-gen game and that might be it. Once the NCAA dropped out, once schools started to express their desire to leave the license, to drop out. It didn't come as a shock for me, and you kind of – but what it does is you have yet another sports game that's gone, and it's a void that isn't going to be filled. And we've seen that in other sports and with arcade games. These games disappear, and nobody else is going to step back up with a new game in their place. It's just the way things work right now. And it stings, I think, the most, because once we got the PS4 and the Xbox One, I kind of recognized that maybe out of all the sports games, NCAA would have benefited the most.
Yeah.
I think it could have been the absolute best of the bunch with proper care. The hardware would have – the benefits would have been extreme for NCAA. So it's a disappointment, not a surprise, kind of an inevitability as it goes with college sports, and we've been seeing it approach this outcome for – you know, it's been on the way to that since like 2009. It's unfortunate, but yeah, we will go on.
But Brian, one thing. I mean, I know that obviously as we've dropped titles and nobody has stepped in, you know, college basketball being one of them. I do think that if NCAA does get right and there is a chance to use actual player likenesses and this sort of thing, then that definitely does put it back on the table. Because as we mentioned, if it's a $40 million settlement, and that is over the lifespan of two, not just one, mm-hmm. two series, that is a pittance compared to the licensing fees they pay on some of these other. I mean, hell, we were just talking about $16 million to a single person, mm-hmm. And you know, $20, $30 million to the NFL Players Association. They definitely make a lot more money and can market it a lot more easily. If you do have this year's current stars in a college football, I think it might even put college basketball back on the table. But that is a long way off.
Yeah, and it depends on how long it is, because if they have to come back and build, you know, 50 new stadiums and,
yeah.
Yeah. You know, build a new engine or, you know, all the yearly investment that goes into these games that they've shared with Madden over the years, if they have to start over, essentially, as we've seen with NBA Live, it's not something that you can just, you know, snap your fingers and you've got a college football game ready. It's, you know, the longer this stretches on, the more unlikely it is that they'd just come right back, and it would make them, you know, absolute sense for them to do so.
I think, to me, the ultimate, or not ultimate irony, that's not fair, but one of the great ironies of the cancellation of NCAA football is that this past year's game was delightful. It was better than Madden on mm-hmm. the current generation consoles, and I don't even think it was much of a debate. I guess it could be debatable. I certainly played it and thoroughly enjoyed it. We played a complete season, you know, Dynasty season, everybody here on the show. And by the end of the year, we were all really having a lot of fun with it. And, you know, we played our bowl games and we did our recruiting. And frankly, the only reason that we didn't continue it was that we were, A, in the midst of the sports game avalanche, and B, then the next generation console games came out, right? And
yeah.
But this past year's NCAA was terrific and had a lot of great things. It didn't dramatically change over the course of the last few years, but it really was sort of the culmination of a lot of things done right. And I think we'll be looked at very fondly as we get further away from it. Before we close, Smit, I know you're not a big college football guy, but you know, how will you view the end of the NCAA football series?
Well, it's certainly true that I'm not a big college football guy, although I did really enjoy the end of the Iron Bowl.
Stop it!
It was pretty great. Let me just say.
By the way, okay, I'm a Philadelphia Eagles fan as well as an Alabama football fan. For those who don't know, I was born in Alabama. Both my parents went to the University of Alabama, graduated. When you've won two straight national championships, you cannot get freaked out and angry about a game like that, okay? Big deal, all right? They lost. They've won two straight national championships. Enough already, okay?
But Rich, that rivalry, it's all about payback.
Oh, of course.
And there is no paying that back, man.
No, I know.
There is no way they will ever get revenge for that.
That is a forever, forever moment in time. You're absolutely right. And I'm just glad I live in New Jersey and not in Alabama. So anyway, yeah. Sumit, I cut you off. Go ahead. I hate you, by the way. I can't stand you.
It's just, it's a shame. You know, there was that Sports Illustrated cover asking.
Oh, stop it. Move on. Move on.
All right. But, you know, so yeah, I don't have a ton of experience playing, you know, college football games. I don't have a lot of sort of the same nostalgia for the NCAA football series that I do for a lot of other sports franchises. But, you know, I'm sure, you know, a lot of you guys and a lot of our listeners saw this last week. Actually, I think right before Thanksgiving, EA put up an article on the NCAA football website that was the history of NCAA football. And it was, it's very similar to, you know, the loading screens in Madden 25 that had like a little factoid about each of the Madden games. So I was looking through that, and it really struck me like how important the NCAA football franchise was over the years as a, you know, a sort of feeder game for Madden, as a sort of you know, testing ground for features that would eventually make their way into Madden. You know, like Madden 99 was the first one with franchise mode, and that's like a thing that's massive in terms of sports games. It's in every single sports game now, but, you know, it actually started, you know, like Dynasty was in NCAA football the year before, in NCAA football 98. You know, then you had real innovative stuff like a team builder, for example. I mean, that's something that's like, you know, the idea of putting that together, a team on the web interface, and all that stuff that came along with it, you know, creating your own fictional school and uniforms and all that other stuff. You know, eventually they did some of that in their other games. So I think that's something that people who even people who don't so much follow college football or follow the NCAA football video game franchise will lose, in the sense of this game being able to be a sort of guinea pig for something that Tiburon wanted to eventually put into Madden. I think, you know, that sort of flipped recently with, you know, Infinity Engine being in Madden last year and then not making it into NCAA until this year. But that sort of was always the trend in years past. And I think that's, for, you know, just from a video game standpoint, is something that we can certainly lament.
So, Chris Shanner, close out our number one story, the end of the NCAA series, with your final thoughts on it.
I'll go back to what Owen and Brian were talking about a second ago. NCAA football, college football, is actually, it's an incredibly highly watched sport in America. It is incredibly popular. It's right up there with just about anything else except the NFL and perhaps the NBA. So I don't believe for a second that the NCAA, with all this talk of Division IV, et cetera, going into the future, I have no doubts whatsoever that this series will have a chance. I don't know if it will, but I do believe it will have a chance to come back. And I believe it'll happen within the next 3 or 4 years. I do not, however, think that I don't think this is a good thing, though, in the short term, because coming back from a 3 or 4 year absence, we've already seen it once. It's just really, really, really hard to do. That's 3 or 4 years of development time. I mean, you're going to see these games. I mean, Madden in 3 or 4 years is going to be, I would say, quite a ways down the road from where it's at today. Why? Because every time you have a launch title versus 3 or 4 years later, it's an incredible difference what happens with something like that. So NCAA will have to, first off, get them to next gen, which, you know, they have the technology for that, but then you have to render the stadiums, which at that time you can probably get away, if there's a Division IV, you can get away with rendering 80 or so and be fine. And, you know, all that fun stuff. So, you know, there's a lot of things going into this. But as far as what we have right now, we ended with a great note on the NCAA series. Absolutely fantastic. I don't believe for a second. I have no idea what that was.
That was Brian's dog agreeing with you.
Yeah, okay. He decided to chime in there.
Okay. Thank you. So, anyways, I believe 100% that NCAA went out on the very highest note. And I believe that as so long as EA is cooperative with the roster makers and they keep servers up for a few years, which I don't know if that will happen or not, but this series can, with this last year's game, can survive a couple of years on roster updates alone. However, I do believe that as we head into the future, if by 2016, 2017, if we do not have another NCAA football game, I'm afraid to say that we may never have another one. I think the next one, though, bold prediction, if we do get NCAA football back, it will be complete with full name rosters, you know, the whole nine yards to the tens, all that fun stuff. And it'll be an excellent experience. It's going to be amazing if it comes back. But for now, it's goodbye. and it's a very sad and bittersweet goodbye.
So I would like to say that we just ended on the actual number one story of the year. But even though we voted, you're all wrong, right? The number one sports video game story of the year was actually not that. Or at least for me personally, by far the biggest sports game story of the year has been this show, the Press Row Podcast. We started the year by adding Brian Weedye from Pasta Padre, which in my opinion solidified the true tenor of the show. And thanks to Owen Good for facilitating that to make that happen, by the way. And then we followed that with a panel at PAX East in March. Along the way, we've had the makers of virtually every sports game come on the show, including guys representing NBA 2K, Madden, FIFA, NHL, Pro Evo Soccer, NBA Live, and NCAA Football. We've also had indie sports game makers come on, including the guys behind New Star Soccer and Your Turn Football. We've had so many terrific guests and special episodes that there are just too many to count. And I have been blown away by how many of the people in our industry listen to and want to appear on the Press Row Podcast. And along the way, I've gotten to spend an amazing year of transformation, of joy, of sadness, of controversy and whimsy with each one of you guys on this panel. It has been a wonderful journey this year, and I can't wait to do it all over again next year. So I want to thank you, Brian Weedye. I want to thank you, Owen Good. I want to thank you, Sumit Sarkar. I want to thank you, Chris Sanner. I want to thank Mike Suzik, who is not able to be on the show tonight, for everything that you have brought to this show. And I also want to say a very, very big thanks to Steve Noah and Matt Holm from Operation Sports for sponsoring and distributing this show. Because without those guys, this would not happen. And I also want to say a massive thank you to each one of the listeners. We have had this show downloaded this year more than 1.3 million times, and you have made this show become so much more than I ever expected. So as we head into the end of 2013, I am humbled, I am blown away, and I am delighted by what this show has become. So for me, Rich Grisham, that is my number one sports game story of the year. So on that note, I just again want to extend my thanks to everybody on the show and to all of you listeners. Much appreciated. Our next full episode or standard show will be our sports game of the year, which I cannot wait for. And of course, we'll have a couple more special episodes as we close out the year. So on behalf of Brian Weedye from Pasta Padre, from Chris Sanner from Operation Sports, for Sumit Sarkar from Polygon and Owen Good from Kotaku, I am Rich Grisham. Thank you, and we'll see you again in 2 weeks. Well, thanks for listening to this episode of the Press Row Podcast brought to you by Operation Sports. I'm your host, Richard Grisham. There are several ways to make sure you never miss an episode. Subscribe to it on iTunes. Subscribe to it on Stitcher Radio. Look for it on your favorite podcast app. Follow the show on Twitter at Press Row Podcast. Or just read Operation Sports every day. No matter which way you get it, please rate, review, and comment on it while you're there. That helps us keep the show going. And also make sure you follow each of our panelists on Twitter. They are as follows: Joysticks Mike Suzik at Mike Suzik. Kotaku's Owen Good at Owen Good. Polygon Sumit Sarkar at Sumit Sarkar. Operation Sports Chris Sanner at Chris SNR. Operation Sports Steve Noah at Steve_OS. Pasta Padre's Brian Weedye at Pasta Padre. And me, your host, Rich Grisham at Rich Grisham. And of course, Operation Sports at Operation Sports. And as always, it's a thrill to bring the Press Row Podcast to life every 2 weeks. And we couldn't do it without the great people at Operation Sports, or you, our listeners. Thanks, and we'll see you again really soon.